Hey guys, this is John Meadows.
And this is Scott Stevenson.
I invite everybody to come out to our seminar, Bodybuilding Fact and Fiction.
Thursday, March 1st at the Doubletree Suites in downtown Columbus. Just before the Arnold Classic festivities, come on in and meet John Meadows, IFBB Pro, the Mountain Dog himself, and Dr. Scott Stevenson. Stay all day from 9 a.m. to noon, then after lunch, 1 o'clock till 4. Starting out with an a.m. pancake breakfast, then all-day lectures. Q&A as time permits, plus best bar ever, and pre-workout from Granite Supplements Speed Force to get you on your way to the gym. For more information, go to drscottstevenson.com. That's drscottstevenson.com. And hope to see you guys there.
At Voices Radio Network.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and with me today is Wade Lightheart. Now, I thought Wade would be an interesting guy to have on. He is one of us. He's been a three-time Canadian bodybuilding champion. He's made it to the universe, and not only that, he's also a vegetarian. He's an author. He's a speaker, and he's just living just this healthy life. You guys have listened to me recently. You know, I've been talking more about just having this, what I'm calling my performance enhanced life, where I want to bring everything into my life that's positive and makes me healthier and makes me stronger and allows me to live my life to the fullest. And ideally, you know, as long as I can stay on this earth, being 100%. So I thought Wade would be a great person to bring on to talk to you guys about this. And then also, you know, I think that we talk about things that are really extreme sometimes on the show. I wanted to bring him on to kind of have a counterbalance to that, to say that, you know what, there's possibly another way, and that we can find a little bit more balance in our lives, and that we can do this and remain healthy. So Wade, thank you very much for being with us, brother. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. I'm delighted to be here today.
So to start us out, you know, we're all meatheads here. Let's talk a little bit about bodybuilding. When did you get involved in bodybuilding? And now also, were you vegetarian all through your career?
No. So okay. I'll give you the journey if I can, and you can feel free to interrupt or interject to some stuff. So basically, you know, three things happened to me that really changed the course of my life and got me hooked into bodybuilding. And that was when I was 15 years old, my parents moved to an extremely rural place. And what I mean by that, it was 5 miles to my nearest neighbor. I lived on a dirt road, wow. You know, the telephone poles under my, at my driveway. That was my nearest neighbor was 5 miles away. And in this rural Canadian New Brunswick is where I'm from. It was, you know, I had nothing to do. At the same time, my sister was diagnosed with cancer. And she was a very athletic, strong person. She was 4 years older than me and, you know, was, you know, super athletic. And I watched her go through the medical model for 4 years before she died. So what I got was, hey, you know what? Your health isn't guaranteed in that process. And then the other thing that happened is right at the time she got sick, she gave me a bodybuilding magazine. It was a muscle and fitness. It had Troy Zuclato on the cover. He just won Mr. America, and he had these two beautiful girls on the cover. Nice. and driven mad with testosterone at 15 years old and no place to go and nothing to do. I was like, okay, I got to get these muscles because maybe that's how I'm going to get these girls. And I had this vision of going to California and, naturally, you know, the Joe Weider dream. And so I didn't have a gym. So I constructed a gym in my garage. Well, actually it was a barn essentially.
Okay.
And kind of Rocky style, and, you know, earned some money and got myself a little York bench set, and I built sawhorses, and I had a chinning rack, and I created a pulley for pull downs and tricep extensions that had a weight that if it'd smash you in the head if it didn't go away. You know, it was very crude.
Right.
But I was reading those magazines faithfully and doing the dream and started that. And then in 1990, I enrolled in the University of New Brunswick and started studying exercise physiology. And I played a lot of hockey at a pretty high level. And at that point, you know, I wasn't a really tall guy. I was about 5'8". So there's like my, I knew my hockey career was pretty much done.
Yeah.
So I needed something else to put all this energy and rage and, you know, like a young man's, you know, what do I do with a, you know, destroying myself? So I got into bodybuilding and did my first contest in 1993.
Okay.
I guess. Yeah. So that's how I got started in the sport.
And so you were eating meat at that time, though. Now, moving forward, where did you go? What happened to make that change? Because I think I'm going to guess, and this is totally a guess, that, you know, my audience, most of us are really into the sport of bodybuilding. And our thought is that to grow muscle, you needed protein, and you need a lot of protein. And where better to get that than from animal sources? That amino acid chain is going to be specifically the best thing we can have to get the ultimate amount of muscle. You're saying to me, moving to a vegetarian lifestyle, this is foreign. This is new territory for me.
Sure, and it was a radical idea, and I certainly didn't. You know, I'm not here to promote vegetarianism or anything like that, but I'll just share how I came to that conclusion or that process or that experiment, if you will. So let's go from, you know, that time, and I'm just doing everything that everybody else is doing in 1993. Now, I continued along on that process, I guess, until around 1996.
Okay.
And, you know, just doing the thing, lifting the weights, doing the training, all that sort of stuff. Had my first contest in 93, got bit by the bug. That was kind of competed as a lightweight. And I was like, okay, this is cool. And then in 96, that was when the EAS stuff, remember back then? And I don't know, you know, where they come out and they show those natural stuff. But what I realized at that point, I went to the, I was living in British Columbia at the time, and I realized, you know, there's I'm missing something here. Something's not working, right? And that's when, you know, I got introduced to anabolics and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, so I was like, oh, I thought I was under the delusion that I could be a champion bodybuilder as a no drugs and vegetarian, not a vegetarian, but just no drugs and stuff. So I realized
just the EAS products, huh?
Yeah, I tried that, and it's like, okay. So then I remember I did my first little mini cycle, I think, in 1996, the fall of 1996. And, you know, it just blew up. I was like, oh, okay, now I understand what's going on here.
The light bulb went off.
And so I went down that route, did the BCs that year, moved back to New Brunswick, did the New Brunswick Championships. And then went again the following year in 1997 and ended up winning the heavyweight and overall for the provincial championships in 1998. Nice. Now, in those days, I think my cycle was $500. That was it.
Okay.
But
you made some serious progress then. You went from lightweight to, did you say heavyweight?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some serious progress. At 5'8", you said?
Yeah. So nice. what was great, I think, is that I cultivated a really intense training methodology. Mm. And a good foundation to start. So you have to realize that there was 10 years that I was training without any kind of enhancement at all.
Right on.
Not just doing the work.
Building the foundation.
Building the foundation and learning my body and how things feel. And really, and you know, I came from a blue collar kind of world. So, you know, work ethic in the gym wasn't an issue for me. And I always had a high intensity. And that's when high intensity training started to come out. I experimented with all the stuff. You know, you do all the stuff. You do the power factor training. You do super slow training. You do high volume, do Arnold's Encyclopedia.
Whatever was in the magazine.
Right? Yeah, you're trying everything, right? And you sit around the juice bar and everybody rationalizes their theories and tries it, you know, whatever you can do another round, right? But what happened is after I won the New Brunswick, I went to the 98 National. I watched the 97 Nationals, and that's when Greg Kovacs was on the scene. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
And he walked out on stage and it looked like something erupted out of the earth a million years ago or something. Like, who? Like, what? Yeah,
he was
what
a freak.
This?
Just a total freak.
And I was just like, what is this? You know? Anyways, I remember seeing all the athletes on stage in that Montreal show. And I, you know, assessed my own physique and I said, I am not at the caliber of these guys. I'm a provincial champion, but the national championships is a whole other level. Hmm. So what I did notice is there was a group of athletes that were doing that just looked better than everybody. They would announce their trainer. So their trainer was Scott Abel.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was really big in the scene at that time.
Yeah.
And I noticed the physiques looked harder and leaner. So I said, you know, I need a coach like that. So I called him up, and I think he was just splitting with Laura Benetti at the time. And so we had to correspond by mail.
Wow. He was,
and of course, she was a great champion in Canada. And so he became my coach. And so then the next year, I went into Scott Abel program. And I really blossomed as an athlete. Hmm. And then I did what I would call a real anabolic cycle with him on that show,
okay.
The 98 Nationals. And I went to the Canadian Championships, placed fifth in the light heavyweight. And at that point, I was like, at the time, that's when kind of there was the Dorian Yates and then Ronnie Coleman was on the scene.
Oof, yeah.
Right? So I remember after the contest, I came up to Scott's place. It was about after the show. I'm like, you know, 6 weeks later, I did all my blood work, all that stuff. So one thing I really appreciated about what he brought to my repertoire is how to look at my health, how to look at, you know, and so, you know, I did my blood test. We checked all my liver enzymes. We really were smart about what we were doing as opposed to, you know, just randomly think, oh, okay, if I'm not pissing blood, I'm all right.
Yeah, you know, and that's something I think people are paying more attention to nowadays. But in that era, especially just the amateur guys, I don't think it was nearly as popular. It wasn't promoted, that's for sure.
No, it was really, I mean, there was a lot of casualties in those days. People just really taking adverse risks.
Sure.
And so what happened there in 1998, I looked at that, and I remember being at his place, and you know, I was all clear and everything ready to go. I was about 230 pounds, still had veins in my abs, and
nice.
I'm like, but I'm looking at the pictures of Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah, you got a long way to go.
and you know, am I really gonna beat this guy? Mm. So that was because I'm always looking at I want to be the champ, right? I want to win.
Yeah.
And I was like, not like if I'm honestly assessing it, you know, Ronnie's playing with a different gene pool than I am.
Sure.
And it was a real crisis for me because I love the sport. I love training. I love the competition. And I never felt bad. Like, you know, I never felt bad about winning or losing for me. Mm. I always put in my diets up. I never cheated on my diet. I did everything to my best. And when I went on stage, I had fun. I enjoyed it. And if somebody beat me, it was okay because I knew I had just done the best I could.
Yes.
You know, and I was not a sore sport, and I didn't win all my shows and stuff. But the bottom line is I didn't know what to do at that point. And it was a bit of a crisis. I moved back out to the West Coast, started a personal training business, opened up a juice bar. And I got lost a little bit, you know, because there was this big hole in my life because I was like, I don't know if I can have a competitive career now based on, you know, what I'm going to have to do on the anabolic side in order to be competitive.
Yeah.
And am I realistically going to be a professional champion that really can make a living out of this? And, you know, when I answered that question, honestly, I was like, no, I'm not that guy. Mm. I'm really, you know, and I think I had another great ability, and that was to be able to honestly assess my physique and where I was at the picture. And I think a lot of people don't, honestly, or they don't take honest criticism. They're really delusional about that. They don't want to hear the truth.
And how old were you at this time about?
So that was in 1998. So I'd be 26 years old.
Okay. So especially at that age, I can tell you in my own life, I felt like I knew everything then. It was really hard to take criticism. It says a lot that you were able to do it at 26 years old to be able to look at yourself like that.
Well, keep in mind at the time, you know, Scott Abel was my coach, and he was about, I think about 265.
Okay.
Just totally shredded and about 2 inches taller than me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe tops. So I'm looking, you know, you had a stark comparison right there that
right.
was a humbling experience. And what I liked about him, he was just really straight up and honest with me and all that sort of stuff. So I really appreciated that about him. And I launched my career because in coaching and stuff because of Scott. So thankful for that. But so I was like, what am I going to do? And then I got lost in the underground party scene, you know, doing lots of ecstasy and living La Vida Loca and all that sort of stuff. And I did that for about a year or so, kind of finding myself, got out of that. and you know, I'm left, you know, not a very good state mentally, physically, all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, man, you know, I just remember the days of when I was just focused on my training and my competition. There's a certain stability that bodybuilding can bring to your life, especially as a man, because there's not a lot of expressions in today's world to kind of overt testosterone. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
There's kind of this apologetic world that we're living in, that you can't be a man, and there's, you know, you can't have men. And this is a place that I could be with the guys and work out and, you know, yell and scream and express myself as a man and physically. And I think that's one of the really great joys about the sport.
And
a lot of people don't understand that, but the guys that do it do. But anyways, sorry to kind of segue.
No, I think that's so important. And it's something I think about. Where else can I embrace, you know, the level of exertion and expression I have when I'm under the squat bar or I'm, you know, leg pressing? There's nowhere else in my life where I have that exact type of outlet, you know?
Exactly. And I think it's something that is really important, particularly for men. And I can't comment for women. I'm not a woman, but I think it's a great way to channel aggression. I think it's a great way to express oneself as a man and to push yourself. And then you get all the biochemical release and, you know, all the endorphins, and you get all the fun. And then the art of discipline, the art and science of discipline, and how you can translate into other areas of your life. So at that point, I had and I'll back the bus up here. One of the reasons I was able to make extraordinary gains is I obtained a bodybuilding hypnosis CD.
You're kidding me. This is a topic I'm fascinated by.
Yes. So I had gotten a bodybuilding hypnosis CD with subliminal programming on the side too.
Okay.
And it was done by a fellow by Dr. Lee Poulos, who was a psychologist in British Columbia, who I ended up meeting, and I actually bought the rights to that program.
Really?
I bought the rights to it. Because he had kind of abandoned it, and I had just obtained it on an old cassette at one time. I got so amazed by it, and then my cassette broke, and I was crushed, and I wanted to get this. And so I started to understand the power of the mind. I got studying super learning techniques. I started looking at meditation practices and things like that, kind of just randomly studying stuff on the mind. Because, you know, if you looked at the top athletes in all sports, almost all of them said that at the top of the game, it's a mental game. And that subliminal, when I started using that subliminal hypnosis, which is not really meditation, but it is altering the subconscious patterns and stuff in your brain so that you can produce results, stay on your diets, all that sort of stuff, I had great results. I was just so much more successful after that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I was like, yeah, I really want to get into this mind thing. So at that point, I started, I had read a book by a guy by the name of Paramahansa Yogananda. He wrote a book called Autobiography of a Yogi. It's a famous spiritual classic. And there inside this book, there is this monk called the Tiger Swami. And, you know, it's the book out kind of follows this life. And he was the first yogi to actually come and live in the West and kind of the father of all the modern yoga movement here in the West. And what was interesting, though, he had this Tiger Swami that was in the book. It's in one of the first few chapters, fifth or sixth chapter, where he goes and meets this yogi who is like a Mr. Universe stack. The guy's got like, he describes him with football-like biceps. Yeah. He punches a hole through a cement wall. The guy literally physically fights tigers with his bare hands. Okay. And I'm like, okay, so this guy just meditates and he changes his mind and builds a super body that he can fight tigers.
Yeah.
I want to learn this.
Yeah. I want to be that guy.
I want to be this guy. So, I started doing that, and then I just started lifting and working on my meditation and, you know, building my body up again from, you know, all the partying and all that sort of stuff. And so that was, I think, in 2001. So we got a course of, you know, the party train really kicked in at 99 to 2000. And then I started cleaning up my life and just training for fun and health and enjoyableness. And at 2001, I decided I was going to be a vegetarian. I had read a book and they had talked about it. And I thought, well, that's an interesting thing. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be cool if I was a vegetarian and a bodybuilding champion at the same time?
That sounds like a challenge to me.
Yeah, like because everybody told me that wasn't possible.
Right, right.
They said, come on, Wade. And I had heard of two different people who had been vegetarians as champions. And one was Bill Pearl.
Okay.
Who was a massive guy back in the 50s and had one of the most extensive careers as a Mr. Universe. And there was another guy, Andreas Kaling, I believe, who was a Swedish champion from way back in the day. Remember, he used to make the posing trunks.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He used to advertise, blonde guy, used to advertise in the body. So I'd heard, I didn't know much about their careers or anything. I read a little bit about Bill Pearl. I said, okay, well, let me give this a try. And at the time, and I was really, you know, I didn't want to get into the anabolic stuff too much because I was like, you know, it was going to be the same game. So I said, this is just going to be a fun experiment to see if I can win again.
Yeah.
And do this and see what happens. And so literally I went at it and full bore. And, you know, I went through my first year, did my first contest a year later, won my first local show. And I won the middleweight and overall.
Okay.
And then I went to – so you notice the difference in weight there because it's about a 20 pounds difference.
Sure. Was, but I imagine you were able to still maintain the same level of conditioning or close
yeah,
to.
That, yeah. Well, that was – yeah. You're probably not quite as hard.
Yeah.
There's a certain fullness, I think, that you get on anabolics that's very difficult to achieve as a natural guy.
Sure.
You know, that's that just that swole look, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. But certainly conditioning was always my success point.
Okay.
I would never outsize guys, you know, even as a light heavyweight or heavyweight. I knew I wasn't going to be able to do that game.
That's the story of my life too. I can yeah. hang with the conditioning but yeah, definitely. I'm not going to be the biggest guy on stage. Mm-hmm.
So from that point, I won my first show. I went to the Western Canadians the next year,
okay.
and ran which was the excuse. They started doing drug testing because they created the natural route to the World Championships in Mr. Universe. Mm. There's two divergent routes now at the national championships. So I went down that route and went to the Western Canadians, ran up against a guy by the name of Kevin Weiss, who is just a fantastic bodybuilder, and he's a lifetime natural, and he also holds records as I think one of Canada's strongest guys. He's a champion powerlifter and a champion bodybuilder. Went on to a professional career in natural bodybuilding.
Really?
And he was in my class, and he was the one guy that could beat me.
Okay.
And so he won. I came second. I said, you know, I'm not going to go to the nationals this year. It was 2002. Let's try it again. And I came back. I worked really hard. I came back again. I won the light heavyweights. Won the westerns. And went to the national championships, and that year they split the weight class. So middleweight and light heavyweight, they now had light middleweight and middleweight and then heavyweight. They split the class that year. So it turned out we went to that. Kevin was in the 85 to 90 kilos cage. I came in at the 85 kilos, so I came in just below him. We both won our championships.
Nice.
So we both won, and I don't know if I would have beat him. I think he was better than me, frankly. And the good thing was I ended up in the Mr. Universe contest from that contest. So I went to the Mr. Universe in Mumbai, India that same year. But that was killer, because what had happened is I was literally on a contest diet from January of that year to November of that year.
Wow.
And, you know, I was stayed in contest condition literally for 6 or 7 months.
So, and not only that, but you know, something I'm wondering, so you're vegetarian at this point, it's got to limit your food options, you know, and obviously, you know, you coach, I do coaching as well. I know that when you start limiting foods, digestion can get really difficult. You know, what were you using for your protein sources?
Well,
through this
at that
period?
Time, there wasn't really any plant sources for protein. So I was what they call a lacto vegetarian. I used whey protein.
Okay.
So I'm trying to apply what I call meat eating mentality to a vegetarian diet, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'd done that. I wasn't eating very much, let me tell you that.
Okay.
But I was eating a lot of whey protein. And after the contest, this is what led me into the whole digestive world, because after the Mr. Universe contest, so I came in, just squeezed in under the class at 80 kilos.
So you were bigger too classes. Now.
I was bigger. I was in, you know, fantastic shape for that show. I look real, you know, I look like maybe like a guy out of the 70s or something. I really had a nice physique, nice. You know, and it was great. And I was pretty pleased with the result. Didn't do well at the universe, you know, like, I don't know, 15th or something like that. You know?
But, it's a big show, huge show.
It's a, oh, well, yeah. But an amazing experience. You literally got that. You know, when you're watching the pumping iron and they're calling out the countries at the end? I swear to God, it was the same guy. Oh, so I had visualized that over and over, and to be there and to represent your country was phenomenal. But after that contest, I gained 42 pounds of fat and water in 11 weeks.
Oh, God. You must have felt terrible.
I felt like crap. Well, I felt like crap for the 6 months leading up to the contest. My joints hurt. Mm. I had brain fog.
Yeah.
I had no energy, you know, it was everything I get through my, like, it was a real, you know, everybody that's on here that's competed knows that feeling.
Oh yeah.
You know, and you know, being in contest condition, your nerves are just frayed.
Sure.
And no anabolic support. Right. So after that contest, I was like, how is this possible? Like, what's going on? Now I'm still doing the meditation. I'm still doing that sort of stuff, but I'm at another crisis, right? Like, God, now I've lost my health.
Yeah.
And, you know, that usually happens to guys in the anabolic world sometime. I never imagined it would happen to me. I figured I was doing this all right. So fortunately, I met a medical doctor who had gone in a holistic path and had recovered from cirrhosis of the liver. He'd recovered from colorectal cancer. And he was using, he said, listen, Wade, you've learned to build the body from the outside.
Yeah.
In, but you haven't learned how to build the body from the inside out.
Hmm.
And that really resonated with me. I was like, wow, yeah, you're right. I don't know. He says, you don't know how to build health. You don't know how to actually affect and make your individual cells healthier and higher performing and better functioning and more energy. And I was like, well, I can't argue with the result. Let me do what he did. So then I went really extreme. So I followed his protocol, and that was taking, at the time, 35 digestive enzymes a day.
Wow.
And a specific type of proteolytic probiotic, which I did, and a tocotrienol amino acid mixture that was made out of rice bran. And I went completely raw food.
Hmm.
So I not only did I not eat whey protein or anything like that, I just went 100% raw food.
So when you say raw food, what do you mean by that?
What I mean is I only ate raw vegetables and fruits.
Okay. That's it. That's it.
That's it.
Wow.
That's it. Followed his program, did all the enzymes and stuff. And that was a key component, the enzymes and probiotics. And nobody was doing that stuff in those days. And bingo, my physique, I got back into just pre-contest conditioning in about 6 months. Felt amazing.
Hmm.
I mean, I had so much energy. My skin was just like transparent. You know, it looked like I turned back the clock. I had my body back. I had my health back. My functioning was great. I really got deeper into my meditative practice and, you know, I just felt awesome. And from that point, I started a clinic and started coaching people on the athletic side. And then also sick people started coming to me, people that were, you know, messed up from, you know, whether it was pharmaceuticals or they had a thing with cancer. And we started using these type of protocols with people and it started producing extraordinary results.
Hmm.
And then I wrote a book about it and started talking about it. And then in 2007, I started using, ionized water to kind of also increase my alkalinity. And at this point, I did the raw food stuff for 2 years, okay. 100% raw food. And then I started introducing cooked foods into my diet in 2005.
Now, does this ever get beyond the vegetables or are you still just using fruits and vegetables here?
No, I was still just using fruits and vegetables.
Okay.
And I started using hemp protein and things like that, that sort of stuff. Yeah. And just making my own kind of things. Right. But I had a little bit more flexibility. So as I call them, a spike day, I could go out and, you know, I could have a veggie burger. Right. Well, that was you know what I mean? I could have my spike days, which some people call a cheat day or whatever. I'd start experimenting with these other foods, because being on a raw food diet and being a bodybuilder, I mean, it's about as socially restrictive as a lifestyle as you could possibly have.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. You're the weird guy in every room.
Right.
So I wanted to improve my social world at that stage. So I started doing that. And then in 2007, I started using ionized water and I was able to train harder and faster and longer.
Huh. You saw a difference with that.
Oh, man, it's great. And, you know, what's interesting is I just interviewed Dr. Horst Filzer, who's a Harvard medical surgeon that put the first stent in the body. This guy is a serious, serious scientist.
Okay.
And he's just actually scientifically proven the benefits of ionized water in human tissue culture with human experiments, like human people, like real people. And they took him to the gym and they trained him, and they actually proved that ionized water actually increases mitochondrial energy, increases and as a definite antioxidant, and restores pH better. So basically what happens is they've proven that you can train harder, faster, longer, and reduced inflammation and delayed onset muscle soreness from using that, which I experienced back then.
Yeah.
I wrote a book about it. And then to prove it, I said, you know what? I'm going to get back into shape and I'm going to compete. So I literally – there was another championships, the INBA national championships was in 3.5 weeks when I made this decision.
Wow.
And I said, I'm going to pack 4 months of training into this.
Okay.
And I'm going to drink about 8 gallons of water a day. I don't know if it was that much, but I mean, I just chugging this stuff every day. And I trained literally 3 times a day, and I did 5 rebounding sessions. I did about 100 enzymes a day. I did like 40 probiotics, these proteolytic probiotics in my diet. And I was able to recover from this training. It was extreme holistic health version of doing it. I got in shape in 3.5 weeks for the championships, won both of my classes, went to the Worlds in Greece that year for the IMBA championships, and placed, I think it was 5th in that show as well at the World Championships. Felt amazing the entire time.
Nice.
Didn't have to do a water cut.
Huh.
Didn't have to alter my diet in any of those. I just ate to the show, had fun, had a great experience. And what was great is being at the World Championships that time, I was relaxed. I was enjoyable. I'm like, I'm the guy that's not supposed to be here.
Mm.
I had a beautiful experience. And for me, that was when my whole bodybuilding career came full circle, because I got right back to the point that I fell in love with the sport again.
Wow.
That I was right back to that 15-year-old kid that wanted better muscles. And I was able to answer all the questions and all the internal uncertainties I had and understand myself as a human being, as opposed to just as a bodybuilder. And bodybuilding became an expression in my life. I ended up starting a company on digestion. I created a course to help people, you know, produce better health. I've been in the meditation world. I got to serve as an advisor to the American Anti-Cancer Institute, because a lot of our products were helping people during their cancer treatments.
Really?
And also post-cancer. I've been able to help over 15,000 athletes around the world. I'll be able to bodybuilding course sold out online. So bodybuilding translated into this very rich experience where I was able to earn a living since 1998 from that sport. I've been able to, you know, meet a lot of great people, have an awesome experience, compete as an athlete from my country, reclaim my health after some mistakes I made, and learned a lot about myself. And now, you know, I'm 46 years old, or will be 46 in May. I'm still in great shape. I feel amazing. I don't have any aches. I don't have any pains.
Hmm.
I work out 5 days a week, and I just feel that, you know, my whole life is transformed because of the sport and because of this process.
Man, this is what I want to see in my own life. This is the direction that I want to go. This excites me. As much as I've always wanted to be, you know, the biggest, the strongest I can possibly be, to me, feeling like I can live the best life possible now, that's to me is so much more exciting to think about. If you were to advise someone like myself, someone like our listeners, you know, a lot of us, like I said, you know, we're following a lot of the dogma that's out there as far as, you know, how bodybuilding works. You know, we're taking the supplements, we're eating the high protein meat diets. You know, we're training hard. What would you suggest would be a good first step to begin to improve our health?
There's two things that I think really make the difference. And I've seen this over and over. You know, when you're consuming large amounts of food, what people have to realize, it's a single canal from your mouth to your anus, right?
Okay.
The food isn't in your body and it isn't in your muscles. So what people have to understand is, you know, your digestive system has to convert whatever you're consuming into, you know, the amino acids. So you can eat protein, but it's that conversion to amino acids that is going to determine whether you do it. And it's also the, if you're not digesting your food, and a good example of this, if, and I'm going to be candid here.
Yeah.
Listen, if you go to the, if you're going to the water, you're taking a shit and it smells like death.
Yeah.
That's what's going on inside your body. And you've got some issues. And what's happening is you have undigested proteins in there, and bad bacteria, the bad guys, are converting that into indole, into skatol, into neurotoxins that are running your brain.
Really?
And they're making you have food cravings. They're making you to think weird things. They're making you to do weird things. And this is now proven, if you get into digestive health and start looking about what's going on. And I think with bodybuilders particularly, we're a lot more subject to those type of issues. I also notice with bodybuilders, I think there's a higher rate of depression than, say, than maybe the normal population. And I have a couple theories of why that is. Number one, you know, going off and on cycles, obviously. That is, you know, you get the euphoria of being on a cycle and then the down of being off it. And then, of course, the psychological relation to how I look in the mirror and defining my self-worth by, you know, my body fat percentage or the size of my bicep or, you know, all that sort of stuff, right? And so those external representations that are so important in the cosmetic side, because it's a cosmetic sport essentially, that you can really start playing havoc with you. I think the other thing is too, is when you run into digestive issues, I think a lot of people, and you're carrying so much muscle mass, the body's always feeding the muscles, and there can be issues in converting the amino acids into the polypeptide chains that run our brain chemistry. If you look at the relation between digestive health and brain chemistry, that's also a big factor. And especially if you have, predetermined genetic factors that might make you more susceptible to depression or to, you know, neurocognitive issues or things like that. And I think it's something that's not talked about openly among people, and the depression that sometimes feel or the hopelessness or the self-flagellation. I mean, I can't tell you how many guys I've seen in the gym that look absolutely fantastic. I mean, they're 235 pounds, shredded to the bone. I mean, these guys would have been winning the Olympia, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
And they're standing there going, yeah, I feel small.
Yeah. I think we can all relate to
that. So they have it. So what really is going on there is, I think and I'm not saying this is for everybody, but I think open and being honestly and identifying, you know, the reason why you got into the sport. And oftentimes a lot of people get into the sport because they felt small, they felt insignificant, they wanted to feel powerful. Maybe there was a psychological or physical abuse area. Maybe there were some insecurities. And by building muscles, you gain self-control. Yeah. You gain control of my life at 15 seemed like out of control. My sister's dying. My parents moved to this place. I'm away from my friends. I don't have anything. And bodybuilding was a way that I got control of my life, that I felt I had control of something. I could control what I eat, I could control my training, and I could see progressive results. And that is empowering. And I think that's the beautiful part of the whole process of bodybuilding, is that I can set a goal, I can make a difference, and I can change one of the most difficult things to change, which, and that's one's physique.
Yeah.
And then somehow it gets kind of bastardized, because now that becomes a competition between everybody else.
And who's the biggest, who's the leanest.
Right. And I lose the self-confidence that I gain from self-improvement. So all of that, I kind of went off on a tangent there, but all of that can you come back to at the fundamental asset, whether you're a vegetarian, whether you're a carnivore, whether you're somewhere in between, whether you're a performance athlete, it still comes down to, can I convert that what I'm consuming? And that can be mentally, but that also can be physically. And I think digestive health is the most important thing that people can look at. And that's why our company that I worked on, we started focusing on digestive health, because I seen what happened at the end. You know, I went to the universe, I pushed myself to the max in 1998 using the anabolic world and the nationals. I knew what the cost was there. I went to the world championships as a natural guy and ran into the same things. You know that post-contest bloat and the sleep apnea and, you know, all these sort of things. I'm like, that's not healthy.
No, God, right?
And I'm not saying that any sport is healthy. All sports, you know, I define what I learned is that the definition between sports and health are very, very different. Sports, like any sport, you have a high level of fitness relative to that sport. In bodybuilding, it's maybe lean body mass and muscle mass in relation. In endurance sport, it's how long you can run at, you know, such a speed. In sprinting, it's how quickly you can get out of it. Every sport has a component of fitness.
Okay.
But what's interesting in the world today is we've sacrificed health for performance. So we have a lot of incredible athletes out there today who are incredibly fit relative to their sport, and that's a performance related.
Right.
However, they're not healthy as an individual, both physically and mentally. You know, they have compromised organs. Their liver might be shutting down. They could have kidney issues. They might have, you know, brain issues. There's, you know, if you look at UFC and all that stuff, you know, guys taking damage with every shot. They have all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
And I love all these sports. Don't get me wrong. I love football. I love UFC. I love body. I'm not here to condemn the sports, but I think what people need to do is to take an honest assessment of what they're doing.
Okay.
Number one, why am I doing this? Number two, how do I look at this as a career? So if I'm going to be a bodybuilding guy and this is a sport that I love, well, is there a way that I can make a living out of this and have my support me and my family and my goals as opposed to being counterproductive? So maybe that is owning a gym, being a professional coach yourself. Maybe that's starting your own supplement company. You know, there's all sorts of avenues where you can take bodybuilding and leverage it into a phenomenal career where you can support yourself and your family. That's great. But the reality is, since 1965, there's been what, 15 Mr. Olympias?
Right, right. There's only so many guys that could be number one.
So there's 15 guys since 1965. So we're talking over 50 years.
Yeah.
That have made it to number one. There's 7 billion people on the planet. Do you honestly think, looking in the mirror, that you're going to be that person?
Hmm.
And if not, how can you be the best person that you can be and make a phenomenal career out of your life and contribute to your community and to contribute to society? And I think, you know, what I love about bodybuilding and what it is, it teaches us so much about life, and if you can leverage those components in a positive way, I think it would return bodybuilding to a status where people actually admire it, and because most people admire the discipline.
Sure,
there's very few sports that have the discipline of a bodybuilder. But let me tell you, if you can apply that in other areas of life, it's a phenomenal thing. But taking care of your health in the long run, you know, we all got the friends. I've got, you know, half a dozen guys that I know that are dead because they pushed it too far. I know a ton of others that have had a number of health problems and are old men at 40 years old. They're old men.
So perspective is what you're saying. You're saying find this perspective and be real with yourself about where you are. And I don't see this as a negative thing whatsoever. I think sometimes I see people that want to blindly just keep pushing forward. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we got to remind ourselves, like for me, I'm a state level competitor. I'm not going to turn pro. And I have to keep that in mind when I decide what I'm going to put in my body going into a show. You know, it's for me, at the end of the day, I can make money through the sport of bodybuilding. But like you said, with 15 guys being at the top, I'm far from even close to that. You know, I'm far from being number one in the sport. I think that perspective, it takes people a long time sometimes. I'm glad to have you here to talk about this. And I'm still amazed that you found it at such a young age. Can you talk a little bit more too? I wanted to work meditation into this, because I feel like observing yourself and being able to step back, it's been a critical role in me being happy in my everyday life and appreciating my place. It sounds like it made a big difference for you, and it helped you to find the balance that you needed to become what you've ultimately become. How can we talk about this in a way that might open some eyes to our listeners and get them involved?
Sure, that'd be great. I think to be a great bodybuilder, to be a successful bodybuilder, you need to have the power of observation. And that is to honestly be able to look at yourself without beating yourself up. And one of the things I remember reading in Arnold's encyclopedia, and how he would look at his pictures and he would assess his physique. And there's a clue there. And that was observational, I guess the word is.
Yeah.
I need to increase my bicep a quarter inch, or I need to increase my leg a half inch. And he would, you know, I can remember those pictures, and I thought, wow, he's really looking at himself objectively. And so I started that process, and I wouldn't say I was great at it first, but I would look at the pictures and I would look at myself and I was like, okay, you know, I need better legs, or I need this. And that was the beginning parts of it. And I think that's what gives bodybuilders a leg up in the meditation world, if they choose to go down that route. Okay. And then the second thing is, there's an internalization in bodybuilding that differs from, say, maybe powerlifting. Powerlifting, you're looking to lift as much weight as possible. In bodybuilding, you're looking to make the exercise you're doing as difficult as possible to produce maximal results. And that develops an internalization with your muscles, and yeah, some people call it the mind muscle connection, but the ability to isolate and feel that bicep, or to isolate and feel any given part that you're working on at a given time. And that is already a meditative and internalized process. And if you look at the top guys, the guys that really are successful, I think they cultivate that ability to really tune into their physique. Hmm. And then that also translates over into their diet. How does my body feel? How does my body respond? And then you start getting visual cues to kind of correlate with your mental processes. And that's where the sport becomes meditative. Now, keep in mind, I started out in a barn by myself.
Yeah.
So it was all internal cues from the get-go. Hmm. I didn't have people to hang out in the gym. I didn't get to my first real gym until I got to college. Hmm. So it was 4 years of training on my own in a barn by myself. And I think that's where that originally cultivated. And I think for bodybuilders out there, hypnosis is another great thing. I think it can be a little passive in the long term, but it's a good start to start cultivating a better self-image and better connection with yourself and a more healthy way of approaching. Okay. And then ultimately, when I started to formally study meditation, I saw correlations between the two. So I started going to a meditative practice and enrolled in a course from Yogananda, that he had, a guy that wrote Autobiography of Yogi. And what was interesting is a lot of the things he was talking about in there related to my sport and bodybuilding. So what I found, and later on I studied this, by the way, I studied it. Of course, meditation process was mastered and first brought about in Indian culture. It's been around for, you know, thousands of years. And in India, they celebrate bodybuilding as a pathway to self-development. So bodybuilders were around hundreds of years ago and celebrated in Indian society and also throughout the Greek society, if you go back then, because they thought there was a combination between body, mind, and soul with Socrates and Aristotle and all those cats 2,500 years ago. And so there was this whole connection between the two, philosophy, meditation, introspection. And as I delve deeper into that, my bodybuilding became so much more enriched and so much more joyful again. And it wasn't all about the external side. And that resonated also in my coaching practice as I coached people, because I was able to see patterns of their own psychology and help them uncork aspects of that so that they could have feeling good. Because at the end of the day, why do people go and train and people diet and people do this bodybuilding sport for one reason, right? It's not that they want to look good. It's they want the emotional or psychological payoff that they think looking good will give them.
Yeah.
So it's all an inside job. The whole thing is an inside job. The ironic thing is bodybuilding is the most external dominant force. The curtain comes up and everybody judges you on how you look externally. Yeah. But how you look externally is often, if in its highest level, I think if you get the right internal game, you will be the magnetic person on that stage. You will be the person that everybody wants to look at. You'll be the person that everybody resonates with. And I think that comes out as you present, as you pose. I think it comes out as you carry yourself in your day-to-day work. Wow. And how you relate to people. And then when you embrace that whole thing, you become this magnanimous energy. And people go, yeah, that's Bob Smith. He's a champion. Great guy.
Yeah, I see
right?
it. I see it. I see what you mean. This is fascinating too, because like you said, with bodybuilding, we focus so much on the external. And if we can, I would love that. I would love to find the balance to be that same person internally as I am on the outside. And I can only see how much better you'd be at the sport, not only that, but in life, but definitely on stage, I could see that it would only make you a better competitor.
It really does. And for me, I would say if I look at my first 10 years in the sport rising up, it took me 10 years to win my first show. And then after that, other than, national championships, I never placed less than second. I was always right there. And I'm not a guy with great genetics. I'm not a guy that was destined for the sport. I'm not a guy that, I wasn't like Ronnie Coleman winning Mr. Texas after eating pizzas.
Right.
I was just a guy that loved the sport. I loved lifting. And I still do to this day.
I can hear it.
I enjoy going to the gym. It's fun. And it's a beautiful thing. And and here's the great thing. Bodybuilding is one of those sports you can do for life. I last year I was at Gold's Gym in Venice Beach, California, the Mecca. You got to go. Everybody's got to go. And guess what? If you go in around 7 or 8 in the morning, every day, Arnold Schwarzenegger is training in the gym.
He is.
He's 70 years old. He's in the gym. So you come up and you're hanging out with Arnold, you have a joke with them. He's one of the guys.
Yeah.
And what a lot of people don't realize is Arnold was retiring at 26. He was out.
Yeah.
He understood that it wasn't sustainable for him to keep going. More people were coming in. It was becoming more increasingly difficult to compete. He did do that one contest back in 80.
Yeah.
When he's a little older, the controversial one, which he probably shouldn't have won.
Right,
it was a
right.
bit of a farce. he was out of the sport way before most guys are competitive.
That's a great
point. National level. And so we're all following the Arnold dream, if you will. Hey, Arnold, look what Arnold did. And one of the most accomplished people in the world. But what happened was he had gotten and mastered the sport of bodybuilding at 26 and all of the characteristics that allows you to be successful in the sport at that early age. Hmm. And then he translated it into his real estate career. He translated it into his business career. He translated it into his acting career, his political career, all of those things. And he goes to this very day, you see him in interviews today, and he's the same thing. He's like, look, everything that I am today, I learned in the sport of bodybuilding. Hmm. So if you're a bodybuilder out there, I think it's important to realize you don't have to win the Olympia to be successful. You don't have to win a national championship. You can take the principles of self-expression and self-determination and self-discipline. And when you master those, and I think going and doing a competition is a great idea, and pushing yourself and competing with your competitors because your competitors make you better, you knowing that you got to get up there and, you know, stand in your marble bag in front of a bunch of people with the most, right. which is probably the most critical audience in the world that you could possibly have. You know, guy walks out, he looks fantastic, like he's got no arms, or you know, you're at 6% body fat. He's like, he's fat, he's right. smooth. You know, it's a tough crowd, right?
It is.
And to go up there and feel good about it and walk off there and say, I did it. And to have the confidence to say, you know what? I did something that's so physically hard. Because competing in a contest is mentally and physically as tough as it gets.
Sure. One of the toughest things I've done.
It is really tough to take that and to say, you know what? I can take this and I can apply it into any area of my life. I can apply it into a relationship. Okay, I'm having a challenge in my relationship. Who do I need to get as a coach to help me learn about myself? I can apply this in my job. What do I need to do to excel and be the best at my job or my career? You can take the same principles, and just like Arnold did, and apply it into any field and have mastery. So why limit one sport to a $10 plastic trophy that nobody cares about after, you know, sits in your closet somewhere or in a room somewhere, but nobody really cares about it. And take those principles that you learned, because it's not the trophy. The trophy is a representation, or the competition is a representation of what you're able to master internally, and take that as a confident thing and say, you know what, I'm going to apply this in other areas. And I think that's when you get the sport.
Yeah.
That's when the sport now translates and enhances every single of your life. But if you get caught in that wheel of external, you know, competition and the negative side of it, where you're competing against other people and you're trying to make this kind of delusive thing that I'm going to be Mr. Olympia, or I'm going to be that or whatever, or I'm going to be a national champion or whatever happens to be, all that sort of stuff. I think oftentimes you can really lose sight of a lot in life. Bodybuilding is a difficult sport. It's a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week sport. And I think in a lot of cases, a lot of people, before they take the blinders off, find out it's too late and they've missed a chunk of their life. And in the worst cases, they lose their health and sometimes even their life.
Sure. Well, I'm grateful that I could have you on here today to talk about this stuff and hopefully give somebody another chance where they don't have to. And I'll go as far as to say, make some of the mistakes that I've made, where maybe I should have started seeing things the way that you do a little bit sooner. But the good news is it's not too late, and that we can all make changes. You know, as long as we're still alive, I think that we can continue getting better. And I'd like to use this opportunity as kind of a segue to kind of shift more to you and talk about what you've done outside of bodybuilding. I know that you've written a lot of books. I know that you have a successful business. Can you tell me and the listeners more about that?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to, because I think, and I'm doing this not to brag or to toot my horn, but what I'm doing it to share as a piece of inspiration, because I believe that hardcore bodybuilders have the self-discipline they can achieve anything they want. And I would encourage them to apply that to other areas of their life. Take what they've learned in the gym and Agreed. Apply it to their lives. And when I did it, you know, first off, again, I'll go back to my mentorship with Scott back in the day. And, you know, I know not everybody's a big fan of Scott or whatever, but what I saw is he had built an amazing career for himself coaching other people. He lived a great lifestyle. He made a lot of money. And I was like, wow, I can do that. So I launched that. When I became a vegetarian and did the sport to express myself, not as, you know, I didn't know if I was going to win or whatever, and I got lucky enough to win. But then what happened is someone, a friend of mine said, hey, you could sell courses online. Hmm. And we wrote a bodybuilding course because it was an unusual thing. And I sold bodybuilding courses online.
Interesting.
And made a great living in the online world that allowed me. I'm living in Panama now. It's great. I moved down here. It's a great place. We run our company all over the world.
You're in products. Panama now?
I'm in Panama right at the moment. I've lived all over the world. I've got to experience a lot of different cultures because I've built an online business. So that translated that. We started a supplement company focusing on digestive health. I started out trying to improve bodybuilders' performance. We wrote a book called back in the day called Freaky Big Naturally. It was back in the time, and created a course and a training system and audio CDs and all that stuff. It was revolutionary in kind of 2004 and made a great, got connected with a lot of people from that. Started a supplement company that changed and morphed into a digestive health company. Hmm. So our company is called Bioptimizers, and we fix digestion. So every athlete that has digestive issues, and bodybuilders and all that stuff, we focus on that because we learned a lot in the bodybuilding world because it's an extreme sport doing extreme things. And from extremes, just like race car driving, you know, not everybody has to go down the track at 200 miles an hour. Not everybody has to squat 500 pounds, but we can learn things from that. Or not everybody has to eat 300 grams of protein, but we can learn things from that. And what we learned is that the digestive health of people is the most important part. So we developed what I call, you know, the most premium digestive health products out there in the world today. And I don't just say that. I'm not making that up. I built this stuff to help me have success because I had issues after the universe, Mr. Universe contest. So that my extreme failing was the opening for me to have a whole career in this digestive health thing.
Yeah.
That led to me, that led also to being, helping a bunch of people that had cancer. I never imagined that. Well, here my sister died of cancer 20 years ago, and now bodybuilding has led me to be an advisor to the American Anti-Cancer Institute. We're on the Truth About Cancer series. We have all these cancer patients. I'm not here to say that we cure cancer or anything. I'm going to be careful about that.
Of course not.
But we assist in people in the recovery through that and during that, and because recovery from a disease is very similar to recovery from bodybuilding. You need to know the components. And so that translated into that, and I got to help people in that. That also led to a speaking career. I got to travel all around the world speaking about the benefits of ionized water and how it improves performance as an athlete. And, you know, recently, if you watch the Tom versus Time, Tom Brady series on Facebook, which is an amazing it's an amazing series about just how focused that guy is. Guess what? There's the water machine that I predicted 10 years before that this was going to be pervasive throughout all athletics.
Do you think that you need to use ionized water continually? I mean, I see it in the stores. I'll see, you know, this is a highly ionized water. If somebody's interested in just giving it a try, can they kind of work it into your diet, or is it something that you need to do full time?
I think if you're training hard at recovery, it is one of the best recovery components I've ever done in my entire career. I can't understand. And the stuff in the store isn't going to work.
Okay. So you need the machine.
You need the machine because what happens is when you create ionization, you're creating, you're splitting H2O into actually a negative ion off the hydrogen. So you're creating an H ion.
Okay.
And that has antioxidant capacities. And also, according to Dr. Filzer, who he just proved in the study, and we can put the show notes in here about it, about human tissues where they're taking him into the gym, it increases mitochondrial energy.
Okay.
This is huge. This allows you to train hard. Like, this does actually help you recover and perform more. And the effects on delayed onset muscle soreness.
Yeah, you mentioned that. That's crazy.
It's unbelievable. Not the stuff that you'd buy in the bottle, because what happens is that ion is only active. The enemies to it are air, light, movement, and time. So a lot of people mistake alkaline water with ionized water.
Oh, and that's what I just did.
Ionizing the water, you need it out of the machine.
Okay.
Like, if you're not getting it out of the machine, you're not drinking it there, you know, there. And, you know, a lot of people have been critical of that, and a lot of people have attacked it. And I'm like, you know what? Put this in your life and start drinking it and see how your results are in the gym. And then it's the end of the story. Hmm. You know, it's like, you know, people thought anabolics didn't work for decades.
Right.
You know,
right.
And bodybuilders were getting huge on it. So it's like, it's kind of like that. And now it's pervasive in sports. So to me, it's a non-issue. And then finally, it's been proven scientifically in human tissue studies. Yeah. So long story short, it just, you know, it led to a speaking career. Speaking on stage was easier. I could actually talk. I didn't and I could wear a suit. I didn't have to be imposing trunks. So translate into public speaking, which a lot of people are fearful of. If you can handle a bodybuilding stage, you can handle public speaking.
Right.
Right. There's nothing tougher than a bodybuilding stage. There's no tougher crowd. So that confidence translated over, and now we have an amazing company with Bioptimizers. I created an awesome health course. So I developed an acronym called AWESOME, which stands for Air, Water, Exercise, Sunlight, Optimizers, which are enzymes, probiotics, essential amino acids, essential fatty acids, minerals, vitamins, and herbs, the things that I think improve cellular function, mental beliefs and attitudes, and education, testing, and coaching. That's the AWESOME formula. I created a course on it. I'll give it away to your listeners for free.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's called the awesomehealthcourse.com, www.awesomehealthcourse.com. And it's 84 little 5 to 15 minute videos of all the things and people that led me to have a better performing life, a higher improvement life. All that stuff is because of everything I learned in bodybuilding. Right. You know, and I didn't learn, like, I want to be clear here. I didn't come up with all these ideas.
Yeah.
I didn't invent all this stuff. All I did is I went out and experimented. And I tried it. I learned that experimentation in bodybuilding, and I just applied it in other areas, and I applied it in health. And it turned out great. So we did the course. We did the company. It's been great. And I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful for what I learned in bodybuilding that I was able to translate it into other areas of my life. I never would have had any of this if it wasn't for bodybuilding. I never would have developed a career if I never had hired a coach. I think a lot of people make the mistake of not getting a good coach, a qualified coach, not just the biggest guy in your gym,
right.
Somebody who really knows the science and medical side of it. If you're going to use that sort of stuff, I got into testing my own health, my own endocrine system, those type of things. All of that led me to my career, and it's all because of bodybuilding.
Well, that's awesome. Also, you have you've got a podcast, the Awesome Health Podcast.
Yeah. The Awesome Health Podcast is basically what I do is I interview someone who has really mastered an area of improving your health or improving your performance, because we start with health, but I'm still that bodybuilder at heart. I want to be faster and stronger, and I want to live longer. You know, it's like a bodybuilder, you're just as extreme by nature.
Yeah.
And everything, like we interviewed Dr. Hart, who I went to, which is a brain enhancement thing. They can improve your IQ. They can improve your memory. They can improve your emotional intelligence in a week. Huh. In other words, you can get like 20 years of meditation practice in a week through advanced neurofeedback technology. We interview him. You know, I interview my old coach, Scott. I interviewed Corey Hawley, who was a guy, he's at 60 years old. He's competing at world championships, both in bodybuilding and at the world championships hammer throw.
At
60 years old, he's a phenomenal physique. He's from, he runs the Qi Institute. He's created a career. Phenomenal guy. Like people like that who have achieved extraordinary success in the areas of human performance and optimization. And and share that with people, because I think everybody wants to know it. There's so many great things now.
Well, this is so cool. Is there anything else we're missing here, Wade, that that we should mention?
Well, the only thing I can think of is I want to talk to that guy or girl. You're in your early 20s. You're full of piss and vinegar. You know, you're training like a beast. You're focused on that goal. You're going to be that champion, and I want to commend you for that, and appreciate and honor that. But I also would encourage you to get some people in your life that are in their 40s or 50s, some good coaching that can add some perspective on longevity. And to recognize that there's no victory in a plastic trophy. There's no victory in a title. Their victory comes from the process and from taking what you learn in the sport and applying it to become a better human and better in your community, and to live a healthy, long, and prosperous life that you feel great about and are able to do the sport for as long as you're on the planet. And that's where the beauty comes into the sport.
Right on. I think that's a great message. If people want to reach out to you, tell them what the URL is for the website and where they can find your podcast and any other materials that you would like to share.
Sure. Well, you want to reach my company and learn more about digestion. You can go to bioptimizers.com. So it's just bioptimizers.com. And for anybody that wants to learn some of the things that I was doing, they can go to the awesomehealthcourse.com. And you can download the course. It's yours, my gift to you. All the videos, you can watch them on your phone or your computer, whatever you like, in the comfort of your own time. And you can scroll through it. I've outlined the areas. For example, we talk about ionized water. You want to look at that. You want to look at digestive health. And keep in mind, I was able to compete at 75 grams of protein a day.
Wow.
You know, I won a national championship on 75 grams of protein a day because I was using specific proteolytic enzymes and proteolytic probiotics that we cultivated and developed for performance, for allowing us to improve our recovery. Hmm. And it's on there. So you can learn all about that. And that's it. And then the podcast is also available on the site. You go to bioptimizer.com. You can click on any of the podcast interviews and stuff like that, scroll through it, and that's it. That's pretty much. And if you want to reach out to me, you can reach out to Wade at bioptimizers.com, or just talk to someone at Bioptimizers and they'll get that message over to me. I'd love to hear your feedback and anything I can do to help support anybody out there. I'm happy to do that. I love this sport, and I'm honored to be here on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here, and I can hear your passion, man. I would love to have you back sometime because I feel like we are just scratching the surface here. I imagine if we had a show specifically about digestion that we could do an hour without even trying, with one hand tied behind your back.
Yeah, you know, that'd be really great because I think people really underestimate how important it is and how easy it is to compromise it. I screwed myself up. And I see a lot happening a lot in the sport, and I'd love to do that.
All right, excellent. Well, let's plan for it in the future. Guys, for Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with Wade Lightheart. We will see you soon.
Thanks so much.